It's more than just words on a page, more than ink and paper. It's a universe waiting to be explored, to learn from, to laugh with, to see life through a different lens. Every story leaves its mark, and every reader leaves with a bookmark. Welcome to The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Good afternoon, I'm Batya Bricker, and a warm welcome to Bookmark, 101.9 Chai FM's show dedicated to books and the people who love them. Today is the day after Tisha B'Av, and we are told that the embers of the destroyed temple continued to burn until the next day. So given that, it seemed a little strange for me to just segue straight into a regular Bookmark show today. And so we're going to do something a little different. I asked the question of how do you go from a period of mourning for 3 weeks, then an intensified 9 days, and then Judaism's most depressing and bitter day, Tisha B'Av, and then quickly move on to Shabbat. So what happens the day after Tisha B'Av, moving from mourning over a broken world to something else? The idea of today's show is to look at the future, to imagine and build the future we want, towards hope. And this bookmark episode is called Dreaming of a Better World. And what I'll be doing is exploring some of Judaism's thinkers, writers, and thought leaders, the modern ones, what they've said about Tisha B'Av, but most importantly, or as importantly, should I say, what to do afterwards. We're going to listen to Sivan Rachav Meir, to Arya Kaplan, of course, Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, and look at their books, their writing, and their words that articulate how they saw the world as a better place. So dreaming of a better, more peaceful, more resilient, more fair, more positive world through the lens of Jewish wisdom and practice. There's one person who really believed we could make the world a better place, and that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The letters of the Rebbe are a vast collection of over 300,000 personal and public letters that he wrote over 7 decades. They cover every topic imaginable, and they've been published as a volume series, 30-plus volume series, called Igros Kodesh, or Igrot Kodesh, which is Hebrew for the Holy Letters. And it gives us insight into the Rebbe's wisdom. So later on, we're going to be talking to Rabbi Ari Kiefman about these books, these letters. And as we delve into the philosophies of these various thinkers, I'd love to know from you. When the world feels broken, do you turn first to hope or to action? Let me know. Hope or action? 061-895-1019.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Welcome back. I'm Batya Bricker, and this is Bookmark, Chai FM's show dedicated to books and the people who love them. Today's show is a little different. We are dreaming of a better world, and we're exploring some of the contemporary Jewish thinkers and writers and thought leaders who imagined healing a fractured world. And that phrase, healing a fractured world, it might feel familiar. It's from Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. And so let's begin with him and his words and his work. He taught that Tisha B'Av is not just a day of tears, but a profound lesson in the courage to hope. And the power of hope was something that Rabbi Sacks highlighted. He said that, in fact, Jews gave the world the narrative of hope. He says, a people that never loses hope cannot be defeated. The Jewish people kept hope alive. Hope kept the Jewish people alive. And he was such a voracious proponent of hope that he wrote not just one, but 2 books actually dedicated to the subject. And of course, it's a theme that runs through many of his other books. But I want to talk about this one. It's called The Power of Ideas. The Power of Ideas, Words of Faith and Wisdom by Jonathan Sacks. And it's so Jonathan Sacks. He says, no nation has dedicated itself more thoroughly than have the Jews to the proposition that ideas have power, that human freedom consists of our ability to see the world differently and thus begin to transform it. From his appointment as chief rabbi in 1991 through to his career in 2020, Rabbi Sacks made an incalculable contribution, not just to the religious life of Jews and the Jewish community, but to the national conversation and even more the global community on issues of faith, of ethics, of morality. And to commemorate the first anniversary, the first Yahrzeit of his death, they published The Power of Ideas. And what it does is it brings together in one volume Rabbi Sacks's BBC Radio Thought for the Day broadcasts, Credo columns from The Times, and a range of articles published in the world's most respected newspapers, even with some of his House of Lords speeches and keynote lectures. So it's told from many different aspects, and you really can hear his voice, which I know many of us miss, in these writings. What I love about it, two things. The one is that these are short pieces of very powerful ideas. So each piece punches a big punch in terms of an idea. But it's really simply written because it was written to be accessible. So some of Lord Jonathan Sacks's work, if you have read it, is quite hard to read and complicated. And you really have to kind of sit up and use your pencil. And that's how you would read his books. But this book is short. You can dip in and out. You don't have to read it chronologically. You can just pick up something that particularly appeals to you. I wanted to read something called The Probability of Faith to you. It was published actually in 2009. And it's just an incredible piece. It will give you a sense of what this is. One of the discoveries of modern science is the sheer improbability of the universe. It's shaped by six fundamental forces which, had they varied by an infinitesimal amount, the universe would have expanded or imploded in such a way as to preclude the formation of stars. And unless we assume the existence of a million or a trillion other universes, itself a large leap of faith, the fact that there is a universe at all is massively improbable. And he goes on to talk about the existence of life and how life became sentient and how improbable that really is. And you don't have to be religious, he says, to have a sense of awe at the sheer improbability of things. He goes on to say right at the end that faith is the defeat of probability by the power of possibility. The prophets dreamt the improbable and by doing so helped to bring it about. All great human achievement in art and science, as well as the life of the spirit, came through people who ignored the probable and had faith in the possible. Rabbi Sacks also is quoted as saying that science tells us what the world is now and faith tells us how it might be. And Rabbi Arya Kaplan is a man for whom this would have resonated really strongly. He was, when he was born, his name was Leonard Kaplan, but he became Arya Moshe Eliyahu Kaplan. And he was an American Orthodox rabbi, an author, translator. And if you have read the Living Torah series, that was his. He accomplished such an enormous amount in a very short life. And one of the big things was that he bridged science and faith, because before devoting his life to the rabbinate, he was a brilliant physicist, lauded as one of America's most promising young scientists. He used this analytical background to address questions about Judaism, and famously, he combined science and traditional Torah ideas in one. And he wrote over 50 books. His introductory pamphlets on Jewish beliefs fueled the Balteshuva movement, which is a term for the massive return of secular and unaffiliated Jews to traditional Orthodox observance. He also was really into mysticism, and he interpreted foundational texts in this area, such as the Sefer Yetzirah and the Behir. But it's his books like Jewish Meditation and the Meditation of the Bible that really opened up what was esoteric and not accessible to the everyday, every man. And he introduced it to the world. And they are sold the world over, still bestsellers in the category. I read the most incredible piece of history about him. And it's just fascinating because it's about the grave of Reb Nachman of Breslov. And in 1979, the government in Uman in Ukraine was planning on demolishing the cemetery that contained Reb Nachman's grave. They wanted to build housing or something over it. And a group of rabbis heard about it, created a huge outcry that went nowhere. But they then went higher and higher to different rabbanim throughout the world, eventually landing at the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he connected them with Rabbi Pinchas Tetz, who then introduced them to Aryeh Kaplan. And using a manual typewriter, Kaplan put together a presentation there on the spot with maps of Ukraine to show the exact longitude and latitude of the grave. And eventually, when it was ruled, the U.S., the Soviet ambassador to the U.S. said, the Kremlin has decided to honor the plan as originally scheduled, except for Belinsky Street. That yard will remain untouched, and it was declared an international shrine. And if you know that Uman in the Ukraine now is a place of pilgrimage for tens of thousands of Hasidim that go before Rosh Hashanah and at other times, he died, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, of a heart attack at the age of 48. But can you imagine if he had had the opportunity to write more? For now, he wrote over 50 books in the time that he did have, and his written works continue to inspire and teach readers today. So I would love to hear from you. When the world feels broken, what rescues you from despair? Do you first turn to hope or action? Let me know. 061-895-1019. First, a word from our sponsors, and then we are going to talk to Rabbi Ari Kiveman about the Igrot Kodesh.
Turn the page. It's the Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Welcome back for this very special episode of Bookmark called Dreaming of a Better World. We're exploring what some of Judaism's thinkers, writers, and thought leaders have said about Tisha B'Av, and as importantly, about afterwards, how mourning the world as broken as it is, and how we can then imagine building a world that we really want. And one person who truly believed that we had the power, individually and communally, to make the world a better place was Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, the 7th Lubavitcher Rebbe, warmly and respectfully dubbed simply as the Rebbe. The Rebbe is considered one of the most influential Jewish leaders of modern times. And he transformed a small community that really was under threat post-Holocaust, struggling to survive, not likely to survive, into a massive global network. He was born in Ukraine, and he received both a traditional Jewish education and a secular university degree in Europe, which I actually didn't know. And during World War II, he and his wife escaped the Nazis and they settled in Brooklyn, and he took leadership over the Chabad movement, which was struggling at the time. And his leadership strategy was simple: to reach out to every single Jewish person, no matter where they lived and how they practiced their faith. And he sent young couples known as shluchim, emissaries, all over the world to set up Chabad houses. And I don't know about you, but I don't think there's anyone who has not been hosted or touched by the incredible work that Chabad House do. From Dubrovnik to Prague to Venice, literally the four corners of the earth. And the rabbi was unique because he combined a deep religious wisdom with a very positive modern worldview. You know, one of the best-selling books on the modern bookshelf is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And I'm not comparing it, Lahavdil. But what the Rebbe was saying, what the Rebbe gave to the world was really the spiritual atomic habits that every single one of us has the ability to do one tiny thing and that could make a huge impact on the world. It was the idea of being a candle in the dark, that a single candle can light up a very dark room. So there are thousands of people today who can attribute their positive life choices and personal guidance to the Rebbe. And in fact, Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks is one of them. He would not have become who he became without the Rebbe's guidance. And a lot of guidance came through letters. My guest today is Rabbi Ari Kiveman, who many of you know and love. He is also the rabbi of Chabad Sandton Central Shul and also the director of Chabad Seniors Program. And so many of you have been asking to get him back on Chai FM, so I've got him back, even temporarily. Rabbi, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Batya. It's always a pleasure to be with to be here on Chai FM and to share some Torah or inspiration with the wonderful Chai FM family.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. For listeners who may have, who may never have encountered the Igrot Kodesh or Igros Kodesh, which is the volume we're going to discuss, what exactly is it? Is it letters? Is it a collection? Is it a series of books? Is it Jewish thought? Is it historical? What is it?
So that's a wonderful place to begin. I think many people have heard, or some people have heard of it, but don't necessarily know what it is. So quite simply, you know, you spoke about the Chabad movement and Chabad houses around the world and the social impact that the Chabad centers, the Rebbe's representatives around the world are fulfilling, are carrying out. Now, of course, I would say since the inception of the Hasidic movement, which was some three centuries ago by the Baal Shem Tov, the term Rebbe is a description of the spiritual leader of the different Hasidic movements or dynasties. But because of the Rebbe's concern, as everyone knows, for literally every Jew and many non-Jewish people around the world, when people refer to the Rebbe, you're oftentimes referring to the Rebbe if it's not in the context of a particular Hasidic leader. Now, while the Rebbe was known for so many different things, one of the things that I don't think is as widely known was, besides for his leadership skills, was the Rebbe's scholarship. Because the Rebbe possessed this extraordinary Torah proficiency. If you listen to the Rebbe's teachings, if you come into Chabad House in Savoy anytime, where our seniors programs is, as an example, one of the recent installations we added was a little cinema, a video, as soon as you come into Chabad House, where people could literally watch the many talks of the Rebbe and the encounters that people had with the Rebbe and can gain and, could glean a little taste of the Rebbe's, call it genius and creativity. So besides for the Farbrengens, where he would host these public talks for hours on end on so many different topics that literally covered the spectrum of Torah scholarship. But one of the other areas that I think is lesser known, or maybe is becoming more known today, some three decades after the Rebbe's passing, was the Rebbe's correspondence with people. The dozens of volumes and literally probably thousands of letters, the correspondence that people had with the Rebbe. And that is the Igrot Kodesh. Igrot Kodesh literally means the holy letters. It's a collection of the Rebbe's correspondence. I think today there's over 30 volumes with thousands of letters that the Rebbe wrote over many years, over the 40 years of his leadership and even before. And I'm told there are many more letters that still have not been published, that they're still working on publishing them. Wow. So it's quite remarkable that, you know, these weren't written as books. They're personal letters that the Rebbe responded to real people who were facing real situations, people struggling with all types of issues, from illness to raising children or searching for faith or business decisions, grieving the loss of a loved one. So many things. How to be a better spouse or parents or communal leaders. So when you open the Igrat Kodesh, these letters of the Rebbe, you're not reading theory. You're watching the Torah come alive in the middle of everyday life. You're seeing how the Rebbe corresponded to people based on the questions that they asked. So that is, in a nutshell, what Igrat Kodesh is about. It's those letters, that correspondence, the care, the empathy, the sympathy, the love. And that's what you would see there, the Rebbe's advice, his blessings, his guidance in so many areas of life, health and relationships, and the list goes on. So that's, I guess, I hope that answers your question about what Igrat Kodesh is and why so many people who are wondering today, what would the Rebbe have said, open these letters and get a little glimpse of what his answers were. Now, of course, I think the answers are written case by case. It's written to an individual. So it's not necessarily advice for all, because I do think, you know, the hat or the advice that I wrote was specifically to certain individuals based on their specific question. But you could say that if the hat fits, you could wear it. And that's why so many people do open the Rebbe's letters and read them and try to see what advice he would give in their particular instances as well.
There's an interesting custom or tradition of people opening the Igrot Kodesh in search of guidance at pivotal moments in life, and not necessarily looking like, okay, I'm going through this and looking for a letter that fits, but simply opening the book, and where it opens is where the answer is offered. Can you explain how that practice developed and what its spiritual significance is? Just give us a bit of background.
Sure. I don't know if I'm qualified to adequately explain that, because I'm not somebody who necessarily does that myself. But I do believe that it's really rooted in a older Jewish idea, a concept, you know, throughout Tanakh, throughout the Torah, then scriptures. We find people turning to prophets throughout Jewish history. We as a Jewish people have turned to great Torah scholars and sages for guidance. And during the Rebbe's lifetime, hundreds of thousands of people encountered the Rebbe, and people sought his guidance in so many areas of life. You know, people would come, as I grew up in the 1980s and 90s, and I'm still growing up, but I remember firsthand. sometimes I'm going in the wrong direction, yeah. But we won't talk about that on air. And, you know, those videos that we play at Chabad House, you could see the people's personal meetings and encounters with the Rebbe. And whether it was in a private meeting, which was not video recorded, and usually those meetings, for the most part, that terminated in the 1970s. The Rebbe took on the leadership of the Chabad movement, as you were describing in your intro, in 1951, in early 1951. And the Rebbe's, the demand of people to meet with the Rebbe was just going through the roof, that by the time the 1970s came around, it wasn't possible for him to meet with every individual who wanted a personal meeting. Of course, there were certain individuals who still managed to have those meetings. But as a kid in the 80s already, there was something called Yechidus Klalis. That was a more of a general meeting you had with the Rebbe. And then there was the famous dollar line, where people came by to the Rebbe on a Sunday, and the Rebbe would give up his entire Sunday from after the Shacharis prayers in the morning until the evening prayers, with a small break sometimes for Mincha, and meet thousands and thousands of people who came by and would meet with him, and he would give them a dollar and a bracha. And you had literally a few seconds to be eye to eye with the Rebbe and to ask him your question. And many of those are video recorded, not all. I still look for, you know, I have about $17 that I received from the Rebbe from 1982 through 1984.
I wish I had had that opportunity. Wow.
But I could hardly find any of them. I was lucky last year to find two of those 17 opportunities, only two of them out of $17 that I have. So, you know, they're not all recorded, or if they are recorded, those videos were not yet released. But the point I'm mentioning it is about the people really seeked his counsel, his guidance.
Yes.
And, you know, you wonder, why were people addressing these questions, their personal matters, to the Rebbe? I believe actually that after the Holocaust, many people were looking for a guide, for a leader. You spoke about the challenges of that time. And the coming from Tisha B'Av, which we observed yesterday, the saddest day in our calendar, and essentially it continued today until about exactly now, midday, that we observed these mourning customs, because the temple was still burning. And there's a famous story in the Talmud about Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues who saw the destruction. They saw the debris. They saw the remnants of the temple. They lived through it. You know, like we lived through October 7th and 9/11. You know, I was at the Twin Towers on that day. Mm. But these are real. These are people who experienced the Churban, the destruction of the temple. And some of the sages cried. They mourned after the Holocaust as well. And the Rebbe took the approach of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva laughed. It wasn't a laughing matter. But he felt it's important to infuse that generation with the joy of Yiddishkeit. The people were already grieving. They're already so sad from everything they endured and experienced in the Holocaust. And the Rebbe really infused Yiddishkeit with joy and happiness and the warmth and love of Yiddishkeit. And what he said, what Hitler, Yamach Shema, the Nazis tried to hunt down every Jew and hate, the Rebbe's approach was to find every Jew with love. And that's why he started and established the Chabad House as in Sent Shluchim all over the world. And at that time, many people were seeking guidance. Many of the Rebbes at that time, their communities were decimated, as was Chabad, by the way. Mm. But the Rebbe found a way, a very unique, out-of-the-box way of corresponding with people, and people from all over the world. So people could have been in Europe and in Russia and in Australia and the United States and Israel, wherever they were, they reached out to the Rebbe and they started sending letters, and the Rebbe would pen a response to each person. In the earlier years, you could see that there were longer letters in which the Rebbe responded to them. In the later years, it became more what was called like a mina, where maybe there was just overwhelming so many letters. And oftentimes the Rebbe would write a note or maybe would dictate to one of the secretaries what to respond, what to reply, but he edited all those answers, all the replies. And oftentimes he wouldn't even write a long reply. There were many times where you see the Rebbe would just circle a word or two and basically give you your answer within your own question. Hmm. So it's quite interesting to see how that all, you know, developed and all. But I think this is something.
Rebbe, are you still there? It seems like we've lost connection with the Rebbe. But while we get that up and running, I just wanted to share with you an idea that I had explored in writing letters to the Rebbe, because people still write letters to the Rebbe, even though the Rebbe is no longer alive. And how does that work? And I had questions around that. And I heard a brilliant answer, that the essence is not necessarily about getting the answers from the Rebbe, but the act of writing to the Rebbe. And it's something that modern psychology attests, that there's a difference, a therapeutic difference, between talking about problems, thinking about problems, and then writing about problems. The act of writing is almost as important as the answer you may or may not receive. So I think that this to and fro of letters going to and from is such an exceptional contribution that the Rebbe gave, that I don't think any other spiritual leader has been able to give such personal guidance and a kind of sense of being heard by someone so spiritually high. So we've lost contact with Rabbi Kiveman, unfortunately, and I had so many questions to ask him, because it's so fascinating, and I'd love to know, you know, are there particular areas of Igra Kodesh that have affected him?
And we don't worship.
So that is something that I would love to know. And I think we're trying to get him up. Rabbi, are you back with us?
Pardon? Are we still alive?
Yes. We've got you back. We lost you for a bit.
I'm with you, but did we lose each other?
We did lose each other.
Can you hear me?
Okay. So I'm going to ask you.
I don't know where was I saying?
I think let me ask you a fresh question. And my fresh question is there a particular letter or any part of the Igrot Kodesh that has meant something to you personally in your own life, or changed the way you lead as a rabbi?
So I would say that in general, you could see themes throughout the Rebbe's teachings, very inspiring, very uplifting, using the Torah theme. And what's interesting, I'll throw a question to you and to the listeners. What do you think is the most often quoted instruction in the whole Torah? Is it to love your fellow as yourself? Is it to keep kosher? Is it to observe Shabbos? And I'll give you the answer. Actually, it's al tira, not to fear. And when I noticed personally, maybe it's just the lens through which I'm looking, I find that theme in the Rebbe's letters that very often he's giving people that encouragement to realize that, like Moshe said, ki karav alecha, that the Torah is close to you, that you're able to fulfill it. Don't be despondent. Don't give up hope. Don't despair. You see that theme throughout the Rebbe's letters. And obviously, each letter is addressing a person's personal request. And I did have one story, and this is over 20 years ago, where my mother fell ill. This is like 2001. And we were seeking guidance. And my mother said, won't you do this? I see that people write to the Rebbe. And we did open to a random page. And I remember seeing something very unique where we opened a letter and it happened to be that date in the calendar. It was around this time in the month of Av. Happened to be my mother's birthday. And the Rebbe was writing to somebody with the same name as my mother, Tzipora, and obviously going through a health challenge. And so we realized this is really unique in that sense. It was very miraculous. And there was guidance in that letter. And there was nothing the Rebbe's guidance was saying, basically, he encouraged us to seek medical experts and to seek a second opinion, which is what we went ahead and did. So the Rebbe constantly encouraged people to think and to ask experts and to consult with doctors or professionals, accountants, lawyers, rabbis. So the Torah never asks us to stop thinking. It asks us to think with humility. And within the Rebbe's letters and the Igrot Kodesh, it's not a decision that's made for you. And I'm not going to tell people to just open randomly and to start following blindly. But I think it helps bring our decision-making into conversation with our soul. Now, at the end of the day, we still have to choose. It's our choice.
Yes.
Judaism places tremendous value on our own responsibility. And I think when you read the Rebbe's letters, you see that he encourages people to do that. So if I think about the letters that I've read and the guidance, I look through the Rebbe's letters very often. And by the way, the Rebbe wrote to people in multiple languages. Most of the letters are in Yiddish or Hebrew, but there are volumes of the Rebbe's letters in English. And there's two types of sets of books that you could find. Both the Rebbe's letters that he wrote in English or had his secretaries write for him, but he personally edited them. And then there are letters from the Hebrew that are translated. So, you know, you could seek the guidance and you could see so much of the themes through those letters. And as I personally found, reading the Rebbe's letters over the years, they really show you how to see life, how to see the Torah with a modern lens, because the Rebbe was sharing Torah's advice and he just was able to hear people's pain and to respond to them. And sometimes you could even see a sharp response. I've got a book in front of me, but I'm not going to go through it to find exactly that letter. But one of the letters, you could see the Rebbe is replying to somebody who, I don't see the woman's letter to the Rebbe, but you could see that she says something about it. She has no joy in life. And in the response, the Rebbe is a little bit sharp and says something about, I'm so sorry that you find that you have so much pain and you can find no joy in your life. Yet you mention your children. You know how many people would give up everything to have children, how much money people are willing to spend just to have a child. Mm-hmm. So within that letter that I was looking for here, again, I'm paraphrasing it now, but that was the Rebbe's response to this person. So on the one hand, you could see he's empathizing with her, so sorry for her pain and suffering, but at the same time, trying to very gently tell her, you also do have blessings in your life. Don't see your life as so bleak and so dark and so difficult that there is no blessing in your life.
Rabbi, we're going to have to wrap up. I loved that story about your mother. I don't think you can listen to a story like that and not get the chills. And books have always been conversations through time. So this is a way of having a conversation with the Rebbe, who is not here in person, but certainly in his words and in the 300,000 letters that make up the Igrot Kodesh. And as you say, they're going to be more. So thank you very much for joining us and sharing your knowledge of life, of love and the love that comes through in the Igrot Kodesh. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you are having a regular wellness check, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside a Dis-Chem pharmacy. Better health starts here.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Welcome back. I'm Batya Bricker, and this is Bookmark on Chai FM's show dedicated to books and the people who love them. And today we're dreaming of a better world. We've just heard all about the Rebbe and his profound influence on the world. We touched on Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And we are now going to move on to a contemporary of the Rebbe's who took a completely different path and had a different view of what a Jewish future might look like. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, were both sons of Hasidic nobility. Both made the rare choice to leave traditional Eastern European circles to study at the University of Berlin in the 1920s. But when they arrived in America, they took entirely different paths. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel became a prominent professor at the Jewish Theological Seminary, and he was a philosopher and very much involved in the secular world. So whilst the Rebbe strictly opposed interfaith religious dialogue, he really believed that Jews had to focus on internal traditional Jewish outreach and Torah observance. Heschel embraced interfaith dialogue, believing that all religions can learn from one another. And there's a very famous march with Martin Luther King, the march from Selma to Montgomery on March the 21st in 1965. It was a pivotal moment in the American civil rights movement. And Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was a prominent Jewish leader at the time already, was seen alongside Martin Luther King Jr. during this historic event. And his presence was incredibly significant because it highlighted the moral gravity of the civil rights cause and the unity of diverse communities fighting for justice. The march was not only a physical journey, but also a spiritual one. And as Heschel expresses, he says, "When we marched in Selma, my legs were praying." You must Google the pic, if you can, the image of this march. It is so moving and so powerful. And of course, it illustrated how faith could play a part in world affairs. We're going to talk more about Heschel after the break, but for now, some word from sponsors.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Welcome back. I'm Batya Bricker, and today we are looking at books that dream of a better world. The person we're discussing now is Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, and he was known for Neo-Hasidism, the idea of bringing the spiritual passion of Hasidism to the modern secular world. And one of the key ideas that he explores is, and a core teaching, is the idea of finding holiness in time, sacred time, rather than just sacred physical places. He wrote that Judaism is about valuing and creating sacred time, holy moments like Shabbat or sacred history, much more important, he felt, than sacred spaces like a temple or a shul or a synagogue. And so although he didn't write specifically about Tisha B'Av, when Jews mourn the destruction of a physical temple in Jerusalem, Heschel's teaching was about reminding them and us that the divine presence continues to survive in time, within communities, within individuals, and that is what must be preserved, nurtured, and grown. He said, just to be is a blessing. Just to live is holy. And to draw together all these different voices, different writers, different thinkers, and for the last segment of the show, I wanted to turn the spotlight to Israeli journalist and lecturer Sivan Rachav Meir. She references both the Lubavitcher Rebbe often and Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel often, and she often compares how these monumental figures would respond to modern challenges. So, like, you know, she compared Shlichut to the radical amazement that Heschel was really famous for. Who is Sivan Rachav Meir? Well, she's a highly influential Israeli journalist, television and radio anchor and lecturer. And she was recognized by the Jerusalem Post as one of the 50 most influential Jews in the world. Her background and her work span several key areas. She was actually, amazingly, a child prodigy journalist at age 6. I don't know how that worked. But she went on to work for Israel's Galei Tzahal, which is the army radio, and then as a primetime news anchor on Israeli television. She was one of the few Orthodox women to reach the top tier of mainstream Israeli media. But she, in fact, was raised in a secular home. She only became religiously observant in her teenage years. She is well known for her inspirational daily thought, which is translated into multiple languages, and of course her global lectures on Jewish life and values. This is what she says, and this is really what informs her work. Rashi has no Facebook page, and Rambam, he hasn't uploaded a story for the last 800 years. So in a way, I feel we're supposed to do it in their name. They're not there, they're not here, but the people are on social media and they are interested and want something short and accessible. And no matter how many people we reach, it is not enough. A beautiful quote from the Rebbe really connected with her, and she says, the Rebbe said, I am always happy, but I am never satisfied. Sivan Rachav Meir's book is called Days Are Coming. It's an English language collection of short inspirational insights into the Jewish holidays and festivals. So it's a guide to all the high points and low points, I suppose, in the Jewish calendar. So although it does touch on, you know, all the holidays, obviously, a time like Tisha B'Av, it also touches on things that may not be halachically holidays, but are certainly significant points in our calendar. Things like Tu B'Av, or things like Tu B'Av, or the 9 days, you know, that you wouldn't find kind of piece, an entire book highlighting the 9 days. And that's something that she does in her book. The phrase days are coming points to the idea that each holiday is a journey that helps us grow and prepares us for special times so that we can truly enjoy what they offer. And her style is to draw from so many sources. She's a gatherer of ideas. So you pick up her book and you delve into a smorgasbord of contemporary rabbis and thinkers from all over the world. It's a book that sits on my shelf. It's a book that should sit on your shelf because you pick it up year after year, reading her insights, which are contemporary and remain contemporary and really speak to the modern Jewish life. So in today's episode, without it being my primary intention, but through the writings and words of some of our great thinkers, we've actually explored some of Judaism's foundational beliefs, the idea of hope, from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks in The Power of Ideas, the intrinsic joy that Tisha B'Av contains and will become from Rabbi Arya Kaplan, the idea that each person is a candle in the dark from the Lubavitcher Rebbe and his Igrot Kodesh, the dedication of time and not just space by Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, and then Sivan Rachav Meir, who draws it all together, quoting nearly from all of them, and the idea of combining mourning and rejoicing into one volume in Days Are Coming. What struck me most is that no matter your flavor, whether a sharing or a sparring, all these foundational Jewish thinkers are connected and continue the powerful work of those before them. I hope that this special edition has given you food for thought and some ideas to fuel your idea of a better world. We're playing out with the Maccabees and the words of the prophet Isaiah, Nachamu Ami, comfort, comfort my people. Goodbye and happy reading.